This is Orson Welles speaking. I want to thank you again for your letters. The manufacturers of a fine radio make it possible for me to send you a 5-tube table motto for any letter used on this program. And this week's radio goes to Francis Martin of Chicago, who wrote me as follows. Dear Mr. Welles, the people in the tool works I worked in during the war had their say about FDR the day he died, but nobody outside the factory heard. This was written by me from notes I took down on the backs of time cards during the shift. It's almost exactly as it happened. So this letter to you is on their behalf. From April to April. The riches of the people cannot be recorded on a time card, but they began to be counted nonetheless as the work siren blew to start the second shift, 4:30 p.m., daylight savings, central wartime. Whitey ran up the aisle from the stockroom and spilled his news. I heard machines shutting off one after another. No rush order had ever circulated in the shop so quickly. No layoff rumor had ever changed the looks on so many faces. Hey, Stash, this screwball says that FDR... Then his face, too, would change. It'd be the next man's turn. Workers with jobs already set up to cut restarted their machines. The accustomed shock of soft steel met by tool steel helped to counter the shock men had inside them. Other workers slid bolts into slots, not with a slap, but slowly, and tightened down nuts, not with a slash of the wrench, but studiously, as if for the first time. My milling machine throbbed each thrust of the cutter into the work, 84 thrusts and throbs a minute. Deep in its total metal, the big machine shook with an undertone I had not listened to before, like a dirge. Casimir of the middle row cranked his work a turn into the cutter and stopped. "I like that man," Casimir said. I could see he pushed his lower lip up so it wouldn't quiver. "I always liked him," said Joe Hedges, the oiler. "Well, there was a man who didn't only go to bankers for advice. No, sir, he talked to scientists and professors and labor men, too. Men who studied every side of a question, including farmers." Beneath the hard lights, head shook, hands spoke with wrenches, the shrill sing-sing of the grinders, the scrape of a lathe taking a heavy cut. Casimir spread a picture page of an afternoon paper on my toolbox, a huge photo of a naked man as thin as ropes bent stiffly over a foul trough, a Nazi prison camp scene. Casimir studied it with his serious Polish eyes while I cranked work into the cutter. "You know," Casimir repeated while staring at the picture, "such things as that make a man ashamed to live in the same world." I reflected that men who earned more for others by working than they did for themselves were sensitive to injustice everywhere. I said, "There are lots of people who think that picture's fine." "FDR wasn't with that bunch," Casimir said. The works blew a lunch siren which pierced everything. We washed and filed into the chromium and fabricoid cafeteria. Herb of the turret lathe, who lunched early, pushed a coffee and pie among our dishes. He operated a food store and liked to scoff cynically at government controls. "The ration boards are all crooks." But Mac had heard enough, old sockless Mac. "What do we do here in this country? What do we know about real war?" Mac roared. "Oh, you know nothing," spoke Zicky, gesturing everything aside. Peasant stock Zicky. He'd mined coal in Central Europe and Central Illinois. "I tell you what war is." Short, hairy, square Zicky had saved up and bought the rooming house he lived in. "I tell you, war is troop of Austrian cavalry coming back. Horse is tired. One horse he falls on hill. Officers say horse is dead. Put him in field. No one can touch horse till government say so. Horse lays 2-3 days, swell up, first stiff, then soft. Officer come back. Officer say, government gives horse. All people I know come with knives. I was kid then. Cut up rotten horse. Fight over it. Take away every bit. Those people hungry. That's what war is. You know nothing." Old Mac smiled deeply. "I remember the president came to Chicago once and rode down a street, and I guess it was when he came to speak at the new bridge and said we'd better fence off Hitler and them fellas. And I looked up at the roofs when the cars were driving by. It wasn't downtown. People on roofs to see him, and most of them acted glad, but I noticed on one roof a bunch of little children. I thought they were shaking their fists at him. I looked close, and that's what they was doing. Some little kids in private school, taught to act like that by their parents. And what do you think of that?" Anti-FDR Ollie of the lathe said, "Newspaper sure tore up those last few weeks into him. since he come back from the Yalta confab. Wonder if they knew he was barely making it. Wonder if he knew. And the other Ollie of the lathes, who was pro-FDR rasped. You saw his face in the photo of the big three, didn't you? He's good for 20 years or 20 days. You couldn't tell. I don't think he could either. But your newspaper writers were maybe hoping. Stash, an aging pole at his lathe. Stash passed his sensitive hands along the imperceptible taper of a brooch he was turning. He looked both grim and tender, as if he wanted to vote again. To vote right now. Best Mill had in the shop, Lindquist. I wonder if they'll let countries be free now. Rest period in the cafeteria, time for coffee. Virgie swallowed and banged down her cup. There was a guy, she voiced, breathing in deeply and huskily, and on her abundant bosom, the big celluloid FDR campaign button rode up and down. Big Stew with arms like bar stock and fingers that could feel a thousandth of an inch looked long at Virgie and nodded. Yeah, there's one guy I hated to see go. I mean, like losing my own father. Stu drove a taxi in 1932. You can keep wearing that button, Virgie, Stu said. Virgie said, are you telling me? Jeff ran his hand truck beside my mill to pour in coolant later in the afternoon. I was brushing my hair when I heard it, Jeff said. I felt like something fell on me. Couldn't see my face in the mirror. Jeff leaned his dark brown arm on the cutting table. Calling the papers a while back, a Black Legion fella staged a run shoot on a colored man, said after why he did it, he wanted to see what a colored man would do when he died. You know, if he was raising a kennel of dogs to be good dogs, you wouldn't kick him every time you went in. Now, a human being, regardless of race or creed or color, is human like you or me, seems they'd know better than treat people that way. Just no reason for it. Jeff pushed off for another machine. I cranked the work into the cutter, listening to the new undertone totaling up among the vibrations like a funeral march. Dantzler, propelling his truck of steel blanks and cutoff. Pushing and out, he always bent stiffly forward, bent by work, by Silesian coal mines, by ships, by wheat fields, by lumber camps, by coal hiking, and now by steel. Dance, what about the peace now when it comes?
I think this. I worked for a farmer once. He owned 2 horses. Farmer next to him owned 4 horses. 2-horse farmer always plowed 2 inches over 4-horse farmer's line every spring, every fall. At last, it's 3 feet overline. 4-horse farmer take 2-horse farmer to court. 2-horse farmer beat up government surveyor, hire own surveyor. Never settled. Probably still fighting. No more stealing 2 inches if farmers cooperate. No more war if nations cooperate.
Dance took off at his angle, bound for the lathes. The morning papers arrived at 1:30 a.m. Roosevelt is dead. An hour to go. Tighten your pieces in the arbor with one pull on the wrench. Look well at the milky cooling water splashing off your cut, flowing down the T-slots of the moving table, draining through the outlet. Consider that other cutting table, the one you read about in the papers not long after D-Day, the special one near Paris in France at a Nazi extermination camp. That table, too, had lengthwise slots and gutters to drain off liquid that splashed and flowed. Instead of steel, it cut people. Instead of milky cooling water, it ran with hot blood. Like your machine, it did not splash the operator. Like your machine, it was scientific, wasteless, exact, faster pace, quicker beat. Still, the machine throbs like 4 notes, but 3 short and 1 long. Like D-Day's V for Victory salute, like the Fifth Symphony. You slam the work into the cutter faster, and the beat changes. It slips into the fifth. Gloriously races like the armies at the Elbe and the Oder. April 12th is already yesterday, but racing ahead of death, past Rome, past Paris, past Warsaw, past Budapest to Torgau to Berlin. The machine thrusts and throbs, labors, shakes, cuts steel. The siren is blowing the end of the shift. Shut off the machine. I wrote my routine note on the back of a time card. Butch, put in a new cutter. Have this one sharpened. Otherwise, all okay. Stuck it in the work on the machine. As one cannot record the unsearchable riches of the people on the back or front of a time card, this has been an addition, a message from my friends about their president. It has been left implicit since April a year ago in milling machines, in lathes, in grinders, in planers, in sharpers, in drill presses. and the men and women who run them. And who remember not only that they lost FDR in 1945, but that he set forth the Economic Bill of Rights on a cold, late October night in 1944 in Chicago, when he came to see them and ask them for their help. Sincerely yours, Francis Martin. Oh, dear Mr. Martin, since he died, Congress has not budged one inch on any important Roosevelt legislation. Mr. Martin, we can do something about that next year. There are tears for him. Tears and what else? Honors and tokens, hospitals and streets and statues. Anything better, more abiding? There's his way of thought, the Roosevelt way, his program. In truth, we cannot honor him except in its service. There are no Roosevelt hospitals as long as a single man dies for lack of a hospital bed. There are no Roosevelt avenues or boulevards as long as any human walking any street is hungry. There are no Roosevelt parks until all the children of men have a place to play. There are no Roosevelt memorials. If anywhere, there is Jim Crow, as long as there are bars against race. We can't afford a single granite plate to do him reverence. The poll tax is too costly. We must speak of him, but let's be careful we aren't merely crossing ourselves as we rob the grave. In the city park today, I saw the green breath of spring misting in the trees, the exclamatory white of blossoms, and blooming in the windows of the public schools, paper tulips, cut out and crayoned by children born since the first Roosevelt inauguration. What will they tell their children about him? That he was neither prophet nor Caesar, I guess. That he was not so much a crusader as the champion of a crusade. That he was not Tom Paine or John Brown, that he was the kind of great man who gets into American history by way of the ballot box. That he was the president. More than anything, he was that. If our children's children read that about him, they'll read the truth. Always and always, he was sensible of the pulse and push of this turning globe he helped to govern. It was his special gift that at every instant of his working life, he felt in every fiber of his withering body the huge throb of the engines of the world. He had the large view of large things. That's the truth of it. He was a president. A president who stood up in the midst of bankruptcy and spoke for plenty, stood fast in the storms of war, and spoke for peace. He was our faith in ourselves, which cannot die with any man. The children of the children celebrating spring today. Will there be parks for their Aprils? Paper flowers in school windows for them? Will there be schools? Will there be windows? It isn't up to Franklin Roosevelt. It never was. It's always up to us. Now, thank you, Mr. Martin, for your letter. My answer was insufficient, but it was heartfelt. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Please let me come to call again this same time. Same station. Till then, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.